Hello, and welcome to the Easy Agile podcast for 2021. Each episode, we talk with some of the most interesting people in tech, in agile, and in leading businesses around the world to share fresh perspectives and learn from the wealth of knowledge each guest has to share. Talking all things from building authentic workplace cultures to implementing agile, women in leadership, and mindset. We have some amazing guests lined up this season, as well as trialing some different styles of conversations, and we can't wait to hear what you all think. So if you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review in your favorite podcasting app. Let's jump into this month's episode.
Welcome everybody to the Easy Agile podcast. My name is Jared Kells and I'm a developer here at Easy Agile. Before we begin, Easy Agile would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land from which we broadcast today, the Wadi Wadi people of the Dharawal Nation, and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and extend that same respect to any Aboriginal people listening with us today. So today's podcast is a bit of a technical one. It says on my run sheet here that we're going to talk about some hot topics for engineers in the IT sector. How exciting. But we've got a couple of primarily front-end engineers, and Angad and I are going to share some front-end technical stuff, and Jess and Jordan are going to be talking a bit about observability. So we'll start by introductions. So I'll pass it over to Jess.
Cool. Thanks, Jared. Thanks for having me on as well. So yeah, my name's Jess Bellevaux. I work for Apptio as an infrastructure engineer. Yeah, Jordan?
I'm Jordan Simonovsky. I work as a systems engineer in the observability team at Atlassian. I'm a bit of a jack of all trades tech-wise, but yeah, working on building out some pretty beefy systems to handle all of our data at Atlassian at the moment, so that's fun.
I'm Angad. I'm working for Easy Agile as a software dev. Nothing fancy on you, Jared.
Nothing fancy.
So yourself short.
Yeah, I'll say. Yeah, my name's Jared, and yeah, senior developer at Easy Agile, working on our apps. So mainly, I work on programs and roadmaps, and yeah, they're front end JavaScript heavy apps. So that's where our experience is. I've heard about this thing called observability, which I think is just like logs and stuff, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's it. We'll podcast wrap up. Over.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, tell us about observability.
Yeah, okay. Well, I thought first I'd do a little thing of why observability, why we talk about this, and sort of for people listening, how we got here. We had a little chat before we started recording to try and feel out something that might interest a broader audience that maybe people don't know a lot about. And there's a lot of movements in the sort of broad IT scope, I guess, that you could talk about. There's so many different things now that are just blowing up. Observability is something that's been sort of a hot topic for a couple of years now. And It's something that's a core part of my job and Jordan's job as well, so it's something easy for us to talk about. And it's something that you can sort of give an introduction to without getting too technical. So we don't want to get down, like, this is something that you can go really deep into the weeds. So, you know, we sort of picked it as something that hopefully we can explain to you both at a level that might interest the people at home listening as well. So maybe Jordan and I sort of figured out these four bullet points that we wanted to cover, and maybe I can do the little overview of that, and then I can make Jordan cover the first bullet point, just throw him straight under the bus.
Okay.
So we thought we'd try and describe to you, first of all, like, what is observability? Because that's a pretty, the term doesn't really give you much of what it is. It gives you a little hint, but it'll be good to sort of baseline set what are we talking about when we say what is observability? And then why would a development team want observability? Why would a company want observability? You know, sort of high level, what sort of benefits you get out of it and who may need it? Which is kind of a big thing. Like, you can get caught up in these sort of industry hot buzzwords and commit to stuff that you might not need or that sort of stuff.
Yep.
And we thought we'd talk about some easy wins that you get with observability. So some of the like real basic stuff you can sort of try and get and what advantages you get from it. And then we just thought, because we're not going to try and go too deep, we could just give a few pointers to some websites and some YouTube talks for like further reading that people want to do and sort of go from there. So, yeah. Jordan, you want to...
Sounds good.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see how this goes. And I guess if you guys have questions as well, that's something we should, you know, if there's stuff that you think we don't cover or that you want to know more, ask away.
I guess to kind of start with observability, it's a topic I get really excited about because as someone that's been involved in, I think, the DevOps and SRE space for so long, observability has kind of come along and promises to close the loop or close the feedback loop on software delivery. And it feels like it's something we don't really have at the moment. And I get that observability maybe sounds new and shiny, but I think the term itself exists to maybe differentiate itself from what's currently out there. A lot of us kind of working in tech know about monitoring and alerting mm-hmm. and things like that. And I think they serve their own purpose. And they're not in any way obsolete either, things like traditional monitoring tools. But observability has kind of come along as a way to understand, I think, the overwhelmingly complex systems that we're building at the moment. A lot of companies are probably moving towards some kind of complicated distributed systems architecture, microservices, other buzzwords. But even for things like a traditional kind of like monolith, observability really serves to help us ask new questions from our systems. So the way it tends to get explained is monitoring exists for our known unknowns. With seniority comes the ability to predict almost in what way your systems will fail. So you'll know the longer you're in the industry, you know this, like a Java server fails in XYZ amount of ways. So we should probably monitor our JVM heap or whatever it is.
I was gonna say that.
I'll try not to get too much into
it. Runs out of memory.
Yeah. So that's something you're expecting to fail at some point, and that's something you can consider unknown. But then observability, the promise of observability is that we should be shipping enough data to be able to ask new questions. So the way it tends to get talked about is it's an unknown of our system that we want to find out about and ask new questions from. And that's, I think, where observability gets introduced to answer these questions. Is that a good enough answer? You want me to go any further into detail about this stuff? I can talk all day about this.
Is it like, so just to repeat it back to you, see if I've understood, is it kind of like if I've got a, traditionally with a Java app, I might log memory usage because I know JVMs run out of memory and that's a thing that I monitor, but observability is more broad, like going almost over the top with what you monitor and log so that you can...
Yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily say it's going over the top. I think it's maybe adding a bit more context to your data. So if any of you have kind of worked with traces before, observability is very similar to the way traces work and is kind of built on top of the premise of traces, I guess. So you're creating these events, and these events are different transactions that could be happening in your applications. A user is submitting some kind of request, and with that request, you can add a whole bunch of context to it. You can add which server this might be running on, which time zone, or which, like, all of this additional analytics data is where you can, like, throw in user agents into there if you want to. The idea of observability is that you're not necessarily constrained by high cardinality data, and to kind of... high cardinality data being, I guess, data sets that can change quite largely in terms of the kinds of data they represent or the combinations of data sets that you could have. So if you're shipping metrics on something on a per-user basis and you want to look at how different users are affected by things, that would be considered a high cardinality metric. And a lot of the time, it's not something that traditional monitoring companies or metric providers can really give you as a service. That's where you'll start paying like insanely huge bills on things like Datadog or whatever it is, because they're now being considered new metrics. Whereas observability, kind of, we try and store our data in a way and query it in a way that we can store pretty vast data sets and say, cool, we have errors coming from these kinds of users, and you can start to build up correlations on certain things there. You can find out that users from a particular time zone or a particular device would only be experiencing that error. And from there, you can start building out, I think, better ways of understanding how a particular change might have broken things or something that you, yeah, some particular edge cases that you otherwise couldn't pick up on with something like CPU or memory monitoring.
Observability is basically a set of principles or a way to find the unknown unknowns?
Yeah.
Yeah, and better equip you to find. Like, one of the things I find is a lot of people think you get caught up in, like, thinking observability is a thing that you can deploy and have and, like, tick a box. But I like your choice of word of, like, it being a set of principles or best practices. Like, it's sort of giving you some guidance around these, you know, having good logging coming out of your application. So structured logs. So you're always getting the same log format that you can look at. Tracing, which Jordan talked a little bit about. So giving you that ability to follow how a user is interacting with all the different microservices and then possibly seeing where things are going wrong and metrics as well. So the good thing with metrics is, like, we're sort of turning things a bit around and trying to make an application instead of doing, like, and I don't want to get too technical, like black box monitoring where we're on the outside trying to, like, peer in with probes and like checks like that. The idea with metrics is the application is actually emitting these metrics to inform us what state it is in, thereby making it more observable. So it's sort of, yeah, I like your choice of words there, Angard, that it's like these practices, this sort of, you know, yeah, guidance of where to go. Which probably leads into this next point of, like, you know, why would a team want to implement it? If you want to start again, Jordan.
Yeah, I can start, and I'll give you a bit more time to speak as well, Jess, in this one. I won't rant as much.
I didn't sign up for that.
I think why teams would want it is because it really depends on your organization and, I guess, the size of the teams you're working in. Most of the time, I would probably say you don't want to build observability yourself in-house. It is something that you can, like, observability capabilities themselves, not, you won't achieve it just by buying a thing. Like, you can't buy DevOps, you can't buy Agile, you can't buy observability either.
Hang on. It says in my run sheet to promote Easy Agile, so that sounds like a good segue, right?
If you want to buy Agile, it is available, right, in the marketplace. Yeah.
Sorry. Go on.
You can buy tools that make your life a lot easier. Yeah. And there are a lot of things out there already which do stuff for people and do surface really interesting data that people might want to look at. I think there are a couple of startups like Lightstep and Honeycomb, which give you a really intuitive way of understanding your data in production. But why you would need this kind of stuff is that you want to know the state of your systems at any given point in time. And to build, I guess, good operational hygiene and good production excellence, I guess as Liz Fong-Jones would put it, is you need to be able to close that feedback loop. We have a whole bunch of tools already. So we have CI/CD systems in place. Like, we have feature flags now, which help us, I guess, decouple deployments from releases. You can deploy code without actually releasing code, and you can actually give that power to your PMs now if you want to with feature flags, which is great. What you can also do now is completely close this loop. And as you're deploying an application, you can say, I want to canary this deployment. I want to deploy this to 10% of my users, maybe users who are opted in for for beta releases or something of our application. And you can actually look at how that's performing before you release it to a wider audience. So it does make deployments a lot safer. It does give you a better understanding of how you're affecting users as well. So and there are a whole bunch of tools that you can use to determine this stuff as well. So, like, if you're looking at how a lot of companies are doing SRE at the moment, or understanding what reliable looks like for their applications, you have things like SLOs in place as well. And SLOs, yeah, they're all tied to user experiences. So you're saying, can my user perform this particular interaction. And if you can effectively measure that and know how users are being affected by the changes you're making, you can easily make decisions around whether or not you continue shipping features or if you drop everything and work on reliability to make sure your users aren't affected. So it's this very kind of user-centric approach to doing things. And I think in terms of closing the loop, observability gives us that data to say, yes, this is how users are being affected. This is how, I guess, the 99th percentile of our users are fine, but we have 1% who are having, I think, adverse issues with our application. And you can really pinpoint stuff from there and say, cool, users with this particular browser or this particular, or where we've deployed this app to. Let's say if you have like a global deployment of some kind, you've deployed to Ireland first because you don't really care what happens to them. You can say, oh, we've actually broken stuff for them. And you can roll it back before you impact 100% of your users.
Yeah, I liked what you said about like the test. I forget the acronym, but for actually testing the end user behavior. That's kind of exciting to me because we have all these metrics that are kind of a bit useless. Like they're cool. Oh, it's using 1% CPU like it always is. You know, I don't really care. Yeah. But can a user open up the app and drag an issue around? It's like,
that's a really great
example. That's
what
I really care about.
the 1% CPU thing, right? You could look at a CPU usage graph and see a deployment and the CPU usage doesn't change.
Yep.
Is everything healthy or not? You don't know. You know, whereas if you're getting that deeper level info of like the user interactions, you could be using 1% CPU to serve HTTP 500 errors, like to 80% of the customer base sort of thing.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Like, how can you, like the SLOs bit, how do you, like, you know a user can log in and drag an issue?
Yeah. I think that would come with kind of instrumenting. Yeah, it comes down to actually keeping observability in mind when you are developing new features. The same way you would think about logging a particular thing in your code as you're writing, or writing tests for your code as you're writing code as well. You want to think about how you can instrument something and how you can understand how this particular feature is working in production. Because I think a lot of agile and DevOps kind of principles are telling us now is that we do own our applications in production. And as developers, our responsibilities don't end when we deploy something. Our responsibility as a developer ends when we've provided value to the business. And you need a way of understanding that you're actually doing that. And that's where, I guess, you do need to think about observability with a lot of this stuff and actually measuring your success metrics. So if you do know that your application is successful, if your user can log in and drag stuff around, then that's exactly what you want to measure.
I think like that, we have that to build.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, John.
No, you go.
I was just going to say we have to build our apps with, you know, integration testing in mind already for doing browser-based tests for our new features. So it would be about building features with that in, like, the same thing in mind, but for testing in production.
Yeah, and the actual writing code part, there's this really great project, the OpenTelemetry project, which provides all these sort of like APIs and SDKs that developers can consume, and it's vendor agnostic. So when you know, you talk about the how do I do this? Like, how do I instrument things or how do I emit metrics? They provide all these helpful libraries and includes that you can have. So it, because the last thing you want to do is have to roll this sort of like a custom solution, because you're then just adding to your technical debt, right? You're trying to make things easier, but you're sort of then relying on, well, I need to keep Jared Kells employed because he wrote a logging engine and no one else knows how it works, sort of thing. And then sort of the other thing that comes to mind just with something like OpenTelemetry as well, and we talked a bit about Datadog. So Datadog is a SaaS vendor that specializes in observability, and you would push your metrics and your logs and your traces to them, and they give you a UI to display it. If you choose something that's vendor agnostic, if let's just use the example of, you know, Easy Agile, let's say they start with Datadog, and then in 6 months' time, we don't want to use Datadog anymore. We want to use like SignalFX or Splunk, whatever the Splunk one is now.
SignalFX.
You can change your endpoint. Push your same metrics and all that sort of stuff, but maybe with a few little tweaks. But the idea is you don't want to tie in to a single thing.
Data structures remain the same.
Yeah. So that you could almost do it seamlessly without the developers knowing. There's even companies in the past that I think have pushed to multiple vendors. So you could be consuming vendor A, and then you want to do a proof of concept with vendor B to see what the experience is like, and you just push your data there as well.
Yeah, I think our coupling to Datadog will be in all the dashboards and stuff that we've made, right? Like, it's not so much the data.
Yeah, that's sort of the big upsell, right? It's how you interact, that's where they want to get their hooks in, is making it easier for you to interpret that data and manipulate it to meet your needs and that sort of stuff.
Observability is just dashboards, right?
Yeah. I wanted to you use this term as well, Jordan, production excellence. And you know, when we talk about, like, who needs observability, like, when you, I kind of was thinking a bit about that while you were talking, and like, for me, production excellence, or in Apptio we call it like production readiness, operational readiness, and that sort of stuff, is like, we want to deploy something to production. Like, what sort of best practices do we want to have in place before we do that? And I think observability is a real sort of great idea, because it's helping you in the future. You don't know what problems you're going to have down the line, but you're equipping your teams to be able to respond to those problems easily. Whereas we've all probably been there, you know, we've deployed code to production and we have no observability. We have a huge outage. What went wrong? Well, no one knows, but we know this is the fix. And there's, you know, it's hard to learn from that, or you have to learn from that, I guess, and protect yourself against future stuff. Yeah. When I think easy wins for observability, the first thing that really comes to mind is this whole idea of structured logging, which is really this idea that your application is your logging, first of all, quite important as a baseline starting point, but then you have a structured log format, which lets you programmatically pass the logs as well. You know, if you go back in time, maybe logging just looked like plain text with a line with a timestamp and error message, you know, whatever the developer decided to write to standard out or to the error file or something like that. Now I think there's a general move to like having JSON, like an actual formatted blob with that known structure, so you can sort of look into it. Tracing's probably not an easy win. That's a little bit harder. I mean, you can implement it with like OpenTelemetry and a few libraries and stuff. You know, requires a bit more understanding of like your code base, I guess, and where you want tracing to fire and that sort of stuff. Passing context through, things like that.
I think that's an easier win. You probably just want to know that everything is okay.
Yeah.
At a fairly superficial level, maybe you just want to do some kind of uptime monitoring. And then as, I guess, your code might get more complex or your product gets a bit more complex, you can start adding things in there. But I think actually knowing or surfacing the things you know might break, those would probably be your quickest wins.
Well, let's mention some things for further reading. If you want to go, like, get the whole picture, the whole real observability started to get a lot of movement out of the Google SRE book from a few years ago. The SRE, like, the Google SRE stuff covers the whole gamut of their sort of site reliability engineering practice. And observability is a portion of that. There's some great chapters on that. O'Reilly has an observability book, I think, just dedicated to observability now.
I think that's still in early release. Download a couple of chapters. Yeah.
The OpenTelemetry stuff, I mean, we'll drop a link to that. I think that's really handy to know.
From, I guess, a noob, which is my perspective, as a developer, like, say I wanted to introduce, currently we use Datadog at Easy Agile. Not very familiar, like, I'm not very comfortable with it. Like, I know how to navigate, but how, like, what's a quick way for me to, like, get started on introducing observability, sorry, to, like, my direct job or at my workplace? Like,
I would lean, I could be biased here, Jess, correct me or give your opinion on this, I would lean heavily towards SLOs for this. And you can have a quick read in
What does SLO stand for, Jordan?
Okay, sorry. Buzzwords. SLO is a service level objective, not to be confused with a service level agreement. An agreement itself is contractual and you can pay people money if you do breach those. And SLO is something you set in your team. And you have a target of reliability, because we are getting to the point where we understand that all systems at any point in time are in some kind of degraded state. And yeah, reliability isn't necessarily binary. It's not unreliable or reliable. It's most of the time it's mostly reliable. And this gives us a better kind of shared language, I guess. And you can have a read in the SRE handbook by Google, which is free online, which gives you a pretty good understanding. And Datadog, I think the last time I used it, had a SLO offering. But I think, like I was mentioning earlier, you set an SLO on particular functionalities or features of your application. You're saying, my app, my user can do this 99% of the time, or whatever other reliability target you might want to set. I wouldn't recommend like 99s of reliability. You'll probably burn yourself out trying to get there. And you have this target set for yourself, and you know exactly what you're measuring. You're measuring particular types of functionality, and you know when you do breach, these users are being affected. And that's where you can actually start thinking about observability. You can think about what other features are we implementing that we can start to measure, or what user-facing things are we implementing that we can start to measure. Other things you could probably look at. I think they're all kind of covered in the book anyway. Data freshness. You want to make sure the data users are being displayed is relatively fresh. You don't want them looking at stale data, so you can look at measuring things like that as well. But you can pretty much break it down into most functionalities of a website. It's no longer like a ping check that you're just saying, yes, HTTP, okay, my application is fine. You're saying, my users are actually being affected by things not working. And you can start measuring things from there. And that should give you a better understanding, or a better idea at least, of where to start with what you want to measure and how you want to measure it.
Mm.
That would be my opinion on kind of where to get started with this if you do want to introduce it.
We're going
to
talk a bit about state and how, you know, with some of these, like our very front end heavy applications that we're building. So the applications we build just basically run inside the browser, and the traditional state, as you would think about it, is just calling a very simple API that writes some things into the database with some authentication and that sort of stuff. So in terms of reliability of the services, it's really reliable. Like those tiny APIs just never have problems because it's just so simple, and they've got plenty of monitoring around it. But all our state is actually, when you say observe the state of the system, for the most part, that's, you know, state in a browser. And how do we get observability into that?
Yeah, I think this is the, like, a big thing is really there's not one thing fits all, right, as well. That's, you know, when we talk about the SLO stuff as well, it's understanding what is important to not so much maybe your company, but your team as well. Like, if you're delivering this product, like what's important to you specifically? So one SLO that might work for like me at Apptio probably isn't going to work for Easy Agile. But when, you know, I think like this is really pushing my knowledge as well of front end stuff. But like when we say we want to observe the state as well, we don't necessarily mean specifically just the state. Like, you could want to understand with like each one of those APIs when it's firing, like what the request response time is for that API firing. So that might be an important metric. So you can start to see if one of those APIs is introducing latency, and so your user experience is degraded. Like, hey, when we were on release 3, when users were interacting with our service here, it would respond, you know, in this sort of percentile latency. We've done a release, and since then, now we're seeing, you know, it's now in this percentile. Mm. You know, have we degraded performance? Users might not be complaining, but that could be something that the team then can look into, add to a sprint. Hey, I'm using agile terms now. Watch out.
That's a really good example, Jess, because performance issues for us are typically not an API that's performing poorly. It's something in this very complicated front-end application is not running in the same order as it used to, or there's some complex interaction we didn't think of, so it's requesting more data than it expected. And it's really like the APIs are returning, like they're never slow for the most part, but we have performance regressions that we may not know about without seeing them or investigating them. Like the observability is really at the individual user's browser level, if that makes sense. So I want to know, how long did, it take for this particular interaction to happen?
I've never done that sort of side of things. Like, as well, the other thing, I guess, you could potentially be impacted in as well, is then you're dealing with, end user manifestations as well, right? Like you could see greater performance on their laptop or something, or their ISP or that sort of stuff, and then so you might, it'd be really hard to make sure you're not getting noise from that side of thing as well.
Yeah, like there are tools like Sentry, mm-hmm. I guess, will exist, which do exist to give you a bit more of an understanding what's happening on your front end. The way Sentry tends to work with like JavaScript is you'll kind of upload a minified kind of map of your JS to Sentry, deploy your code, and then if something does break or work in a fairly unexpected way, that tends to get surfaced with Sentry. It'll tell you exactly which line this kind of stuff is happening on. And it's a really cool tool for that kind of stuff. I don't know if it'd give you the right type of insights, I think, in terms of performance.
Yeah, we use a similar tool.
Yeah.
And it does work really well for crashes and that sort of thing. And on the observability front, we kind of log actions, like state mutations inside the front end, not the actual state change, but just like labels that represent, that you update an issue summary or you click this button, that sort of thing. And we send those with our crash reports. So it is super helpful having that sort of observability. So I think I know what you guys are talking about.
That's almost like, a form of tracing. Like for me and Jordan, when we talk about tracing, we might be thinking about like 12 different microservices sitting in AWS that are all interacting, whereas you're more shifting that, that's sort of all stuff in the browser interacting and just having that history of like, this is what the user did and how they've ended up
in that bad state.
In that state, yeah.
I guess even if you don't have a lot of microservices, like if you're talking about particular, like you're saying, for the most part, your API requests are fine, but sometimes you have like particular large payloads or
we actually have to monitor. I don't know, maybe you could help with this. We actually should be monitoring maybe who we're integrating with. Like it's actually much more likely that we'll have a performance issue on a Jira API rather than. And that's also, we don't see it. The browser sees it as well, which is...
Yeah, and tracing does surface all of those regressions for you. The most tracing libraries, like if you're running like Node apps or whatever on your backend, I can just tell you about Node because I probably have the most experience writing Node stuff. Like you pretty much just drop in DDTrace, which is a Datadog library for tracing, into your backend. And you'll hook itself into all of, I think, the common libraries that you'll tend to work with. Like if you're working with Express or for a lot of like just HTTP libraries, as well as a few AWS services, it'll kind of hook itself into that. And you can actually pinpoint, it'll kind of show you on this pretty cool service map exactly which services you're interacting with and where you might be experiencing a regression. And I think traces do serve to kind of surface that information, which is cool. So that could be something worth investigating.
It's funny, this is a little bit unrelated to observability, but like you've just made me think a bit more about, you know, how you're saying you're relying on third-party providers as well.
Yeah.
And something I think that's really important that sometimes gets missed is, like, so many of us today are relying on third-party providers, like AWS is a huge thing, right? A lot of people writing apps that require AWS services. And I think a lot of the time you people just assume AWS or Jira or whatever is 100% uptime, always available, and they don't write their code in such a way that deals with failures.
Yep.
And I think it's super important. So many times now I've seen people using the AWS API and they don't implement exponential backoff. And so they're basically trying to hit the AWS API, it fails, or they might get throttled, for example, and then they just go into a fail state and throw an error to the user.
Yep.
But you could potentially improve that user experience, have a retry mechanism automatically built in and that sort of stuff. I think that's doesn't really tie into the observability thing, but, you know, something.
And the users don't care, right, if it's... And no one cares if it's an AWS problem. It's your problem, right? Your app.
They're using your app exactly, right? It reflects on you, sort of thing. Yeah. So it's in your interest to guard against like an upstream failure, or at least inform the user when it's that case. Yeah.
Well, I think we're going to have to call it this podcast because I've been instructed max 45 minutes.
We could just keep going. We might need a part two. Maybe we can request. Maybe. Or we'll just start our own podcast.
Yeah.
So what biggest learnings from today? Given it's been Ungard and I just learning about observability, Ungard, what was your biggest learning today about observability?
My biggest learning was that observability does not equal Datadog. Now, it's just very fascinating to learn about quantifying the unknown unknowns. I don't know if that's a good takeaway. But...
Any takeaway is a good takeaway. What about you, Jared?
I think I was thinking, like, because we're going to talk about state management, and part of it was how we have this ability at the moment to, the way our front ends are architected, we can capture the state of the app and, like, get a customer to send us their state, basically, and we can load it into our app and just see exactly how it was, just the way our state designed. But what might be even cooler is to build, like, maybe some observability into that front end for support. Like, I'm thinking instead of just having, we have this button to send us out your support information that sends us a bunch of the state, but it, like, instead of console logging to the browser log, we could be console logging in our front end somewhere that when they click send support information, like, why isn't it sending us, our customers could be sending us the actions that they performed, you know, like, hey, there's a bug, send us your support information. It doesn't have to be a third-party service collecting this observability stuff. Like, we could just build it into our app. That's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, for sure. It'll probably be a lot less intrusive as well as some of the third-party stuff that I've seen around.
Yeah, it's pretty hard, like, with some of these integrations, especially if you're developing apps that get run behind the firewall. You know, you can't just talk to some of these third parties. So, yeah, it's cool, though. It's really, really interesting.
Well, I hope someone out there listening has learned something, and I mean Jordan and I will send some links through, and we can add them hopefully to the show notes or something, so people can do some more reading. And
awesome.
Thanks for having
us. Thanks, Jared. All for your time, and thanks everybody for listening.
Thanks, everyone.
That was
huge. Tune in next week.